Good afternoon. The time is 12:06, and it's time for Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOY. If you'd like to join today's conversation, give us a call by dialing 260-452-1185, posting on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or sending us an email at middaymatters@nipr.fm. On today's show, we're focusing on Burn Awareness Week for the entire hour, including scalding, burn preventative measures in-home and inpatient and outpatient treatments. I'm Sarah D'Elia, joined in the studio by my co-host, Dr. Peter Rothman, who's going to introduce the rest of our guests for today.
Thank you, Sarah. Since 1974, Fort Wayne has been very fortunate to have the St. Joseph Regional Burn Center of the Lutheran Health Network serving our community and region. Our burn center is one of only 63 verified dedicated burn centers in the whole United States, and one of the three in Indiana, the only one in the state verified for both adult and pediatric patients. 500,000 Americans receive treatment for burn injuries each year. 40,000 people are hospitalized for burn injuries. 4,000 deaths occur each year from fire and burn injuries, so this is a major problem. Here to tell us more about Burn Awareness Week and the St. Joe Regional Burn Center and the evaluation and treatment of the severely burned patient are Dr. Albert Morrison, board-certified plastic surgeon with Summit Plastic Surgery, Pat Skillbred, manager of the Outpatient Burned Wound Center, and Tammy Renner, interim manager of the Inpatient Burned Wound Center. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
And Pat, please start the discussion by describing the goals and the scald injury focus of the American Burn Association's Burn Awareness Week.
Exactly. Burn Awareness Week is a week sponsored by the American Burn Association that is honored throughout the nation to just inform and remind the public of the dangers of a burn injury, prevention tips, and treatment. This year, the focus is on the scald injury, which is a common injury we see in the burn center. Children below the age of age 3, it's the most common injury they receive. Usually happens in the home, in the kitchen area or the bath area. And about a third of our patients seen at the regional burn center, are pediatrics.
And, of course, when it comes to the younger patients in the home, often they're running around and don't understand the dangers. So the importance of the Burn Prevention Week is to help emphasize what we as adults can do to make our home a better, safer place for the children. And therefore, the nice thing is there are a lot of preventable, simple things that, you know, if you're aware of, that you can keep a real serious injury from ever occurring, which is what our goal is.
And Pat and Tammy, could you give our listeners some tips as to what families can do in the home, working with their children, to prevent these burn injuries that apparently 40% of all burn injuries do occur in the home environment?
Right. Commonplace, of course, is the kitchen. And if, as a parent, I'm sure all of us can understand that those little people like to be around us when we're cooking. So it's a good idea just to designate a safe zone in the kitchen. That means an area where there is no danger of receiving a burn injury while the parent is cooking. Some other things are, you know, having the child play with age-appropriate toys versus pots and pans, because then they associate, playing with pots and pans and could sustain an injury that way when the pan is hot. Turning pot handles towards, away from or towards the back of the stove, cooking at the back part of the stove instead of the front, making sure there's no dangling cords on the little toddler that's toddling in the area. As far as food served on the table, you know, making sure the food is in the center of the table so they can't bump it if it's on the side. Never carrying a child when you have a hot beverage in your hand. So those are some tips for the kitchen. You have some tips for the bathroom, Tammy?
One of the major things that you can do is just to watch your water temperature of the hot water heater. A lot of people have them automatically set at 140 degrees, and we actually recommend 120 because the time and temperature relationship for severe burns increases very quickly as you increase that water temperature. Just a few degrees makes a big difference, especially on a child or even an older person with thinner skin. So that's definitely one thing you can do is turn your hot water heater down to 120. Also, watch when you're bathing children. You always want to check. Always test the water yourself first to make sure that it's not too warm. If you have people with disabilities or older people in the house, same thing. You just want to make sure that the bath temperature is okay before they get in. And usually another thing we like to recommend is to turn the cold water on first and also turn the hot water off first. Have the cold water be the last thing that's flowing through so that if a child does reach up and actually hit the water faucet to turn it back on, it's going to be cooler water coming through versus the hot water.
And I think the big thing, too, is just constant attendance with the child that's in the bath. And they mention keeping the bathroom door closed when, you know, you're not using the bath. And turning the child opposite of the faucets when you're bathing them so they can't grasp the faucet handles. So those different kind of things.
And never leaving a child in the bathtub alone at any time. And the same thing in the kitchen. Never leaving a kitchen with cooking food on the stove, especially if there's children present. Dr. Morrison, what should an individual do when they get burned in their home? What should the first thing they should do? And what are the things they should not do?
It's a broad question. Obviously, you have to be careful to make sure the source is taken care of. So if it's we're talking about scald injuries mainly, which is probably not as important, but if it's a frying pan with a grease fire, having that smothered rather than taking it and putting water on it, which would actually exacerbate the type of reaction. So as far as the care, obviously, you know, a minor first degree burn that's closed, that doesn't have any open injuries or any loss of skin is something that we tend to treat with Dermade. We have a product, or with a aloe product called Dermade. And in that case, if it's very minor, that can be treated with that type of limited intervention along with some oral pain medicine like Tylenol. But if there's any significant open burn, skin that's denuded, it's considered a second degree burn. And really, we would recommend that's something that is taken care of by a medical professional. And the burn unit, of course, is able to take care of any size burn, small, large, and in between. And our expertise is such that individuals that come to us will receive the quickest recovery, the best care to allow that to occur in a timely fashion. Certainly other resources that can help with the process, the family physician, and also the emergency department are also indicated. Obviously, if it's a severe burn, that's something that should be called 911 and immediately attended to as fast as possible.
But for minor burns, through the years, people have always talked about putting Crisco or butter on it or ice cubes, and there seems to be some question as to the validity of those approaches.
First of all, the most important thing is to stop the burning process emergently. You know, if it's a scald, remove their clothes. You can cool them down a little bit. Never use ice. Ice actually creates a deeper thermal injury, we would call it, because such as frostbite, it freezes the tissue. And it's especially dangerous if there's been blistering and you've lost your protection from the environment, the skin. So no ice. And we will a lot of times have calls come in about butter or Crisco. And no, the most important thing at the time of injury is just a cool compress. Stop the burning process. If there's blistering, give us a call. And we can direct you to the correct treatment.
And cool water, putting it under cool water is reasonable, lukewarm or cool water?
Yeah, cool is fine, sure. And then you can even use a washcloth as a cool compress until, you know, the burning process is stopped because it'll inhibit how deep the injury is. And again, no ice.
when the patient first shows up at the burn unit with an acute burn, Dr. Morrison, what types of burns do you most frequently see that require hospitalization? How do you decide what's an outpatient or an inpatient case? And what is the initial evaluation of the acute burn patient?
Initially, a lot of times the nurses will initially be looking at the patient to start to begin the evaluation process after the patients come up through the emergency room or possibly through the clinic. The physician, if he's present, will also be able to evaluate directly and look, but sometimes a phone call is made. As far as the actual, severity of injury, it's going to depend. There's an ABA criteria set that's well determined that allows us to make a good judgment call who should stay or go. And for most individuals, a 20% open burn would be a second degree burn that would be requiring an admission. If you're young, younger than 5 years, or if you're older, the amount of burn second degree is down to 10%. Third degree burns are a smaller area, would require an admission, particularly if it's on the face, hands, perineum. And a lot of the other aspects are, is someone also debilitated from other illnesses? Diabetes, for instance, increases the risk of infection, slows down the healing process. And so therefore, that's also taken into consideration, along with the amount of pain that someone's experiencing. Would they require IV pain medication for that admission?
And obviously, the initial concern is shock and airway, making sure the airway is open, and treating shock with fluid replacement and oxygenation if necessary. What about inhalation burns? This requires a little bit different approach if someone comes in with an obvious inhalation burn.
The inhalation injury can be sometimes completely separate from any other burn. If an individual is in a closed space with the effects of the toxins from the burnt products that are in the air. And so an inhalation injury, is something that will, A, make the actual severity of the other burns worse because the body reacts in a more inflammatory stimulated process that's going to endanger the patient. But the inhalation injury is something that increases the fluid resuscitation requirements. It increases risks of pneumonia, sepsis, and difficulties with the patient being able to survive the injury. So therefore, that's an area that is also addressed at the time of admission. And occasionally, rarely, you'll have a person that has an inhalation injury with carbon monoxide poisoning, which requires possibly a hyperbaric oxygen chamber utilization to remove the carbon monoxide from the system more quickly to reduce the risk of brain injury as well. And the St. Joe Burn Center has a chamber to accomplish that.
I want to remind our listeners that you are listening to Health 360 on WBOY 89.1 FM. And if you have a question or comment, do give us a call. Our phone lines are wide open, 260-452-1185. We are discussing today St. Joe Regional Burn Center here in Fort Wayne. We're talking about Burn Awareness Week, who is the prime candidate to get a burn, how we can prevent the burn, and how we can treat the burn. So if you have a question, or maybe how you've been treated in the past, or ways that you've sought resources in town that you'd like to share, give us a call, 260-452-1185. You can always post questions and comments on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or you can send us an email at middaymatters@nipr.fm.
And Tammy, could you tell us more about the unique aspects of the inpatient facilities, the new 18,000 square foot burn unit that was renovated in the last year or two, and the unique features that our center provides?
Yes, we're a 12-bed unit now, and that actually increased from previously a 10-bed unit, so we've increased a couple beds. And we have now a reverse airflow system that circulates through the burn center to help with infection purposes. We tend to keep people back in our enclosed area, I guess you could say, in the burn center to help prevent any hospital acquired infections. burn infections or infections in burn patients is one of the biggest complications that we have to worry about. We also have our own OR suite right there in the burn center so that we don't have to transport our patients through the hospital to the regular OR. And it is actually kept at a warmer temperature than the normal surgery suites would be. And that's obviously due to the problem with hypothermia if you have a large burn areas. So we've got that capability, and it's a wonderful thing that we have there too.
And that's 90 to 95 degrees?
That's usually what we keep it at when we're doing surgeries, yes.
Which makes it difficult for the for Dr. Morrison.
It really does wear you down, and we have to spend often for the major burn cases three or four hours in the OR. So you're drenched with just sweat and dehydrated by the time you get done with that process. It's amazing what that can do to you.
And Pat, the hyperbaric chamber, it's mainly used for wound infections, but it can be used for burn infections as well, burn injuries as well?
Right. There's certain diagnoses that qualify for treatment in the hyperbaric chamber. In association with burn injuries, one of the most dangerous or most critical injuries is the house fire. It's the most common cause of death in the burn center. And, of course, the inhalation of the smoke. You have the cyanide poisoning and you have the carbon monoxide poisoning. So they're really at risk of brain or neurological insult. So it's very important and vital that if you have a patient come in that has a high carboxy level, that means the amount of carbon monoxide that's bind with the hemoglobin, which usually carries oxygen. If that's high, they certainly qualify for the chamber, and it's important for immediate or emergent transport to the chamber. If we can put the patient in the hyperbaric chamber and clear the carbon monoxide, we can usually clear it within 23 minutes versus 5 hours if they're on just nasal oxygen in an emergency room. And why is that important? It's important because you certainly drop the risk of, like I said, neurological injury or brain injury and anoxia, which is the limited oxygenation throughout the body.
And Dr. Morrison, the high pressure oxygen helps with healing, both in terms of your tissue grafting and sometimes with infection healing too?
The most clear-cut indication is the carbon monoxide poisoning. The second indication is there are a few individuals that will meet criteria to have the burn injury occasionally treated with HBO, particularly if there's signs of infection. And sometimes if our surgical procedure's been done, we've laid the grafts and we're having problems dealing with some healing complications. There's times when that is also indicated. And finally, if we've done a flap to reconstruct a wound, the flap itself is based on a blood supply that sometimes is limited. And when that happens, that's another indication to try to add some blood or some oxygenation to that tissue to help it survive while it's in limbo as well.
So it's a useful gadget. By the way, the gadget holds up to 17 people, so this is a very large chamber, apparently.
It is. And then also, of course, there's getting onto the next phase. There's a lot of utilization of HBO for different types of wounds that are not necessarily burn-related wounds as well.
260-452-1185 is the number to call. If you have any questions or comments, we're discussing Burn Awareness Week on Health 360 today. And you can always post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or send us an email at middaymatters@nipr.fm. Along the lines of talking about the facilities that we have at St. Joe's Burn Center, I wanted to talk a little bit about the funding of the center. We're lucky enough to have a thriving center here in Fort Wayne. When I remember just around this time last year, there were many different burn units across the country closing because of expenses. It's one of the more expensive parts of the hospital. So, Pat, I'm going to start with you and ask you, how are we doing so well here in Northeast Indiana? How's the burn center thriving? And what is the justification for continuing the funds to the burn unit here?
I think everyone knows about our Regional Burn Center in Fort Wayne, Indiana. It's a great service to have in the community, and we've seen a tremendous support from the community and also from administration and also from our health system, community health systems. So together they okayed or authorized renovation of our burn center, which was $6 million about, it's going to be 5 years ago. And so what, they've also been very creative. So we want, the community wants the service to stay here, and as does the administration and Lutheran Health Network. So we've combined our wound and burn services together on the second floor. And what that has done for us is brought another, should say, payer mix for the patients that are admitted to the burn center, and that's the wound patient. We have a wonderful wound service through our wound center, and some wounds are able to be surgically closed once mm-hmm. they're ready. And so that consultation immediately goes to our plastic surgeons, which is Dr. Morrison and his group. And those patients are admitted to the burn center. Their surgeries, reconstructive surgeries, are done in the burn center. So that's actually increased our admissions and increased our payer mix. Burn centers are closing across the nation. We used to have, I suppose, around 140, now currently maybe 125. And they're closing because of the cost of health care. I mean, it's very expensive care, multiple surgeries, multiple procedures and dressing changes. Unfortunately, as you can imagine, some of our patients do not have insurance. Some may be underinsured, and we are committed to doing the service of burn center. We turn no one away.
And Dr. Morrison, I'll ask you the same question from your standpoint. What is the justification for continuing to fund the burn center here in Northeast Indiana?
For me, it's the concept of compassion and the fact that the burn patients are amongst the most unfortunate individuals that are in the medical system at the time that it mm-hmm. happens to them. It's often the young, the old, the infirm, or the debilitated that are going to be injured. And to render a compassionate care to the population is extremely important. And Fort Wayne has a large enough population base with the city and the surrounding areas to really have a volume that's appropriate for a burn care center. And I really couldn't imagine as a physician what would happen to the community if we lost this resource. As a physician, I do the surgeries, but the vast majority of the care that's actually rendered is done with the nursing care and the supportive staff, the nutritionists, the physical therapists, occupational therapists, psychiatrists, or the mental health or individuals. So therefore, it's a great team that's involved in rendering the type of care that you just can't reproduce very easily or quickly. And it's, you know, fortunately been put together through years of understanding these processes. And so hopefully we can maintain this resource for the community to keep us as good as possible here in Fort Wayne with this type of care.
I think it should be pointed out that this is a regional burn center, and I believe any burn patient within a 150-mile radius of Fort Wayne will be sent to our regional center here. The other thing to keep in mind is there are close to 12,000 outpatient visits to our burn center, and they have burn support groups, and a very important add-on would be burn camp for children who have had burn injuries that is also available to the community. So this is more than just a hospital facility. This is a community facility. Mm-hmm.
And I do want to get into some of those outreaches and resources that we have for folks who either have suffered from burns themselves or have children or family members. We need to take a short break here on Health 360, though. So in the meantime, if you have any questions or comments, feel free to give us a call during the break, 260-452-1185. Always can post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or send us an email at middaymatters@nipr.fm.
Please. Police in Florida busted a man for growing pot after a police dog sniffed the weed from his front porch. The dog's nose provided police with probable cause, but critics argue the dogs are often wrong and, in this case, violated the man's privacy. I'm Neil Cunningham, the work and the rules and the training of police dogs. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
You help pay for public education in Indiana, but from the Capitol to the classroom, the payback isn't always clear. You can find out how the state's policy impacts your family in our new State Impact Indiana Project, a local national collaboration between Indiana public broadcasting stations and NPR. You can hear the stories during Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and Weekend Edition on NIPR, and dig deeper with a click on the State Impact logo at nipr.fm.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Cameron Memorial Community Hospital, providing health and wellness services in the spirit of charity, concern, and excellence, serving Steuben County and surrounding areas. Information at CameronMCH.com. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by United Way of Allen County, ensuring children and youth have opportunities and skills to succeed in school and life. UnitedWayAllenCounty.org/education. Welcome back to Health 360 here on WBOY. Questions or comments? We're talking about Burn Awareness Week. You can give us a call at 260-452-1185. You can always post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, with any questions or comments, or send us an email, middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia, joined in the studio by my co-host, Dr. Peter Rothman. We also have Pat Skilbred. She's the manager of the outpatient services at the Burn Center here in Fort Wayne, as well as Tammy Renner. She's the interim manager of the inpatient burn and wound center, and Dr. Albert Morrison, who is the guy that's helping to operate on all the people that need help dealing with burn injuries. We're talking about Burn Awareness Week, which is going on right now. If you have any questions or comments, get in touch with us. We're going to go to the phone lines. We have John, who has a question about the different types of burns that are possible and if there are any natural remedies. John, welcome to Health 360.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. I have a question to ask for Dr. Peter regarding any natural remedies that we have. Like I heard that there's a potato skin peel off you can put on a blister or something that will, subside or heal up faster, or how many kinds of burned types are there, just for revising, if you can explain me, and also the natural remedy, if you can, if it helps. I don't know, I heard about it, so if a doctor would go into it and explain. Thanks.
Dr. Morrison?
Thank you very much. I appreciate the call, John. The couple concepts that go along with any of the topical treatments that we render is the fact that in some respects they in a way you can say they're all kind of natural. When it comes to again, like we mentioned earlier, a first degree burn that's closed, it's an aloe, a plant-based product that works incredibly well, and so that's clearly the best treatment for something that's closed. The other thing that matters immensely to patients' recovery is the other aspects about their lifestyle. Are they eating do they have good nutrition? Are they staying away from smoking and tobacco products? And so, the good nutrition, adequate vitamins make a huge impact on how someone's going to do. If you're someone that's generally healthy and live a vigorous lifestyle, the blood flow to the tissue is naturally stronger from that process, and those people tend to withstand the effects of the burn better. So there's the microvascular circulation is able to withstand it. And then as far as natural products, they're, you know, and the Amish community has had some things that they like. We've seen some ointments that they've tried that has, in my opinion, some definite utility to a good salve that can heal wounds. Now, I think there's sometimes a difference of opinion on how much of it to use and when to use it and how far you can take it. But we've worked in conjunction with the Amish community with the B&W ointment that they have. And a lot of times I've been able to kind of work with them to kind of go with what could make sense that they've already been using in the past. Mm-hmm. So certainly there's a lot of room for obviously continuing to develop new and better products. One of the more recent products that we have that's really worked well for kids is a new product called Mepilex AG. And the AG stands for the silver ion. So it's a foam pad that has silver ions in it. The silver tends to act as an antimicrobial. It's not an antibiotic, but it actually has antimicrobial properties and healing properties that we have found as an alternative dressing that particularly in children, we can put that on instead of having to change it twice a day. If it's the right type of burn that's clean enough, we can leave it on 2 or 3 days at a time and substantially diminish the amount of pain and traumatization that goes for the child and parent at home while they're doing their wound care. Mm. So we're always involved in newer products, whether they're natural or you know, variants of natural products.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of leads into the next question that I wanted to ask was about some of the local resources that we have here in Fort Wayne. And Pat, is there a number or a way to get in touch with you all to, if you have basic questions like this, like is aloe the thing I should be putting on this particular burn? How can people get in contact with you all to kind of ask these questions if they don't necessarily need to go in for an appointment?
Yeah, and that's what we recommend, really. You know, if you're at home and your child is injured or you're injured, you know, just give us a call and we can easily direct you in the right, you know, on the right trail for treatment. The number to call is 425-3567. You can call 24 hours a day. If that's the clinic outpatient number, mm-hmm. If, you know, there's no one in the clinic, it automatically goes to the inpatient area. They're all experienced nurses, so that would be the best number to call. We also have a website at Lutheran Health Network, and you just go to St. Joe, and you can get a lot of information off our website. But honestly, experience is the best policy, so I would recommend calling in and talking to the experienced nurses.
Are there any different types of burn injuries that we run into in the home other than scalding and fire-induced burns?
Oh, certainly. We see a variety of things, and I'll start, and maybe Dr. Morrison and Tammy can help. But a common injury we see with the adult is the inappropriate use of gasoline. It's probably the most common adult injury we see. And gasoline's very flammable. It creates a very intense hot heat, so you can have a fraction of a second flash and have a very serious injury and even, you know, the risk of death. So that's very serious. Like I said, one of the most common things we see. So, you know, you should only use gasoline in your car. Don't use it in the carburetor, and don't use it on a brush or trash fire. And people forget that they've spilled it on their clothing or, you know, bonfire, and then all of a sudden the fire goes up and their clothing goes up. So very serious injury there. Electrical injuries with pediatrics. A common thing is, not common, but it you don't want it to happen at all, is you know, frayed electrical cords. These little guys will put them in their mouth and start to chew, and then they end up with usually a third degree burn injury on the corner of their mouth. It's called the commissure. Mm-hmm. So we see that, or putting little pins in electrical outlets. Another injury for kids that you don't think about is the treadmill injury. This morning, Dr. Morrison was in clinic, and we saw a little guy that had put his hand in the tread of the treadmill. Ooh. And that causes a friction burn, and it's usually the little fingers and usually very deep. So those are a couple of things. Tammy, want to add anything else?
The other thing that I can think of, especially that a lot of adults don't realize they're allowing their children to heat things up in the microwave. Microwaves actually are notorious for overheating food, and we see a lot of burn injuries from that also. Ramen noodles is a big one. You know, little kids think that they can fix their own, and then they spill it on themselves, and we actually see quite a few injuries from those. So the microwave, we think it's kind of a safe thing for kids to do, but really they still need to be to watch it over, and we kind of need to not let your really young kids heat up food in the microwave also. So,
and opening a microwavable popcorn bag can be a real blast of heat and vapor, as well as plastic frozen vegetables in plastic bags. If they're not punctured and at a time, there's a blast of heat and steam that comes out of these too.
Right. We recommend really for children that they shouldn't use the microwave unless they're older than 7 years old. And a common time of the year that we see microwave injuries is during the summer, because the parents are working. You know, the children are home cooking their own lunch. And so, it's kind of a common thing we see during that time of year.
We have just about 20 minutes left in today's program. So if you do have a question or comment, 260-452-1185 is the number to call with any questions or comments. We're talking about Burn Awareness Week. You can also send us an email at middaymatters@nipr.fm or post on our Facebook page.
To kind of finish this discussion, which has been excellent, by the way, I would just reemphasize one more point that was made, and that is the gasoline has just been incredibly volatile, deadly, and the amount of, as Pat said, injury that occurs very quickly from it is amazing. And, you know, there's just so many things that I see as a physician that is so magnified so much worse by the use of gasoline. So don't ever use that as an ignition agent for bonfires. Be very careful that that's kept away from other flammable sources in the home. And that's something that just too many guys go out and try to start a fire using gasoline. It's a real tragedy. The other thing that we see a lot of, sadly, and it's very unfortunate, it's an unfortunate thing that's going on in this era, and that is methamphetamine lab explosions are the injuries from those are becoming very commonplace. So the unfortunate victims are burnt very severely. And unfortunately, they do almost always require admissions. They oftentimes need surgery, and it's a devastating explosion that occurs when people are trying to produce this with these home labs. And obviously, hopefully, you know, nobody listening is involved in such activity, but I would just highly emphasize to the population that this is a real problem right now, and unfortunately, the explosions are very commonplace, and it's one of the more common injuries we now currently see.
Okay, Dr. Morrison, once we're confronted with a third-degree burn that has gone through the epidermis, the dermis, and into the subcutaneous tissues, and possibly even deeper, what is your role in cleaning the wound, grafting, transplantation, worrying about infection, and then finally reconstruction and scar removal?
The third degree burn is a burn that just cannot regenerate itself, unlike a second degree burn that actually heals by the remaining deeper injury or the deeper elements of the skin, such as hair follicles and sweat glands, where some epithelial cells reside. They can actually branch out and resurface a wound. And so the healing process is pretty remarkable in those cases. A third degree burn, being full thickness, has lost that part of the deeper skin that would be able to regenerate itself. So it has to burn or heal by a process called creeping substitution. Therefore, some smaller third degree burns are able to actually heal themselves over time. And so the judgment call I have to make is this something that's reasonably going to heal on its own? Sometimes an elongated, narrow strip of skin is going to actually heal a third-degree burn without surgery. On the other hand, third-degree burns that are starting to become a significant percentage of the body surface area present a real danger to that patient, because the eventual migration of an infection with microorganisms will take over, and that will result in sepsis or a systemic infection that will start to affect other organ systems and shut those down. So one of the tenets of good care would be that if anyone has a fairly substantial third-degree burn, and it's clearly that, then we're going to want to get that patient to surgery within a reasonable time frame to remove that dead tissue. And often this is a multi-staged process rather than just able to do this at one time. So therefore, you might undergo a long two or three debridements where we place a skin substitute or possibly a graft from an animal called xenograft or from another human called allograft that is able to temporarily cover the wound while the patient maybe gets a little bit stronger, recovers systemically so that we can then take skin from other parts of the body that are not burnt and shave those off in a very superficial fashion, such that the deeper elements that I just mentioned are still there to regenerate where we take the skin from, and yet the skin has enough of the properties that will actually allow it to lay on top of a clean wound, and the body will actually grow blood vessels into that skin graft, and it will actually become living tissue once again that's incorporated. So that's a process that starts with what we call plasmodic imbibition, where you initially actually have the fluid from the tissue being taken into the skin graft. Eventually, new blood vessels grow into it, and that's called inosculation. It's an old Latin term meaning to kiss, where blood vessels line up and kiss and grow together.
And scarring is a major problem. It can limit motion in certain areas and obviously be disfiguring. So that's where you come in again, relieving the scar and reconstructing?
Yeah, we call that late effect cicatrix. The scarring process isn't unfortunately as good as we'd like it to be. So therefore, in many cases, with the types of healing that occur, there's going to be some contracturing or tightening of the tissue, particularly around joints such as the neck or the axillary or the armpit regions, wrists, hands. And at times when that process is completed, they're healed, they're better, they're over the systemic effect of the burn, but yet they've developed a lot of contracturing. In that situation, we can go back and do some type of surgery to release the scar. We either can sometimes take some of the tissue around the area and do what's called a Z-plasty, which is kind of one of those common plastic surgical terms from the past. Or we can take and actually put new skin with more skin grafting in that area. But it's pretty impressive what a Z-plasty can do for someone who has a moderate problem that's not too severe. I'm always stunned at how that can release the tissue for a really nice improvement for the outcome for that patient.
We have just about 10 minutes left in today's program, so if you'd like to ask a question or you have a comment, 260-452-1185 is the number to call. Remember, we always have our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or our email address, middaymatters@nipr.fm. We're talking about Burn Awareness Week on Health 360 today, and I want to make sure that we get a chance to talk about all the wonderful resources that we have for people, from the burn camps to different support groups that we have, and if Tammy and Pat, you can talk a little bit more about the ongoing outpatient services that you all provide, because it's not just surgery and then leaving. It's continuing to heal both physically and I feel mentally as well if your appearance is permanently scarred or changed. So, Pat, I'll start with you. If you could maybe talk a little bit about some of the resources we have for folks that are dealing with a significant change in appearance.
Sure. Great thing about a burn center is once the patient's discharged from the inpatient area, they automatically come into our outpatient arena. So it's a continuum of care, and we make sure that the patient completes their healing as quickly as possible with the best outcomes. And unfortunately, there are, there is a risk of scarring and things like that. One program we have in the clinical area is image enhancement. If you have a patient with facial scarring or discoloration, it's a service we offer with no charge, and it's camouflage makeup. And teaching them social skills and how to handle the staring and the questions in the community. So we have that. We also have the SOAR program, which is survivors offering assistance and recovery. That is managed by our behavioral health therapist. And this is actually if we have a patient in the inpatient area with a significant burn injury, you know, that's devastating to them and their family and, you know, the problems of returning to work and school. We actually have survivors that are trained that have been a burn victim, and they're trained on helping this patient through the recovery process. We have the burn camp program. We have a burn camp champ, where this is a designated nurse that hooks up with the family and the patient as they're admitted initially, mm-hmm. kind of follows them periodically through the inpatient area, then through the outpatient area, and, you know, explains about our burn camp program and are you interested in and the benefits of that program. It's mainly on rebuilding confidence and self-respect.
Is that for younger victims of burns?
It's
or?
For children age 8 to 18.
Okay.
And it's in Indiana. It's called Hoosier Burn Camp. And so that's an active program also.
Great. Tammy, anything to add?
Yes, we also have what we call the burn suites. It's more for the families of our inpatient burn victims. What it is, though, is it's on the actual St. Joe Hospital campus. It's in the medical office building, and we have it's almost like a small hotel room where the families can stay because we are a regional burn center and we get people from all around. They're not always able to go back and forth easily, mm-hmm. so we have these suites available that they can stay in for a very nominal fee, and sometimes it, even if they can't, you know, afford anything, it can actually be free, and so that they can stay and be with their loved one and not be too far away, because so many people just say, well, you know, I can't leave, but they do need, the families do need to get away and relax and kind of have time to think and get away from everything that's going on, mm-hmm. and this, it gives them a place to do that and kind of rejuvenate themselves and then to come back with their family member, mm-hmm. so
that's great. And Peter?
And it's our impression that obviously the Regional Burn Center is a full service unit that not only takes care of the acute problem, but as we just mentioned, has you will have long term relationships with these patients. The patient may be returning frequently through the years to the plastic surgeon for reconstructive surgery. And then we have to keep in mind that the acute burn or the electrocution that may be associated with it is a form of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and you have long-term psychiatric and social service as well as OT, occupational therapy and physical therapy facilities too, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. We function with the burn team, okay? And that's the surgeons, of course, nursing, inpatient and outpatient, nutrition, pharmacy, behavioral health therapist, occupational therapy, physical therapy, case management, you know. So we meet once a week in the burn center. It's called Grand Rounds, and the team participates and starts with the discharge process at admission. So each week we join together as a team and together plan the treatment plan for that patient for the best outcome as quickly as the patient can, you know, maneuver through that process.
I'm a little curious about, you talked a little bit about what some of the resources kind of coaching these people or helping them acclimate to how folks may approach them or treat them differently because of their physical appearance. Maybe for some of our listeners, what are some tips for if you're a family member or a friend of somebody who recently experienced a severe burn? What are some kind of compassionate things you should be keeping in mind dealing with this person and interacting with them from here on out now that their physical appearance may be changed for the rest of their lives?
I think the biggest thing we you know, instruct the patients on is expressing their feelings. I mean, if you can get that family member to speak and talk of the incident or their feelings as much as you can, then they're dealing with it consciously instead of subconsciously. And if, you know, if they deal with it subconsciously, a lot of times it leads to nightmares, sleep disturbances, which spirals into depression. So I think that's the most important tip is open communication.
And we have just about 4 minutes left in today's program. So if you do have any questions or comments, give us an email at middaymatters@nipr.fm, or you can post on our Facebook page. With just about 4 minutes left, I kind of want to give everyone a last word in today's program. And Dr. Morrison, I'll start with you. Anything that folks should take away from, in particular, for Burn Awareness Week that you'd want to make sure was resonating in their mind as we end today's conversation?
The first thing I'd say is the importance of this week, I think, cannot be understated. As far as, again, if we can even save two or three significant burns, then we've done our, you know, done our job. Nobody at the burn unit wants to see anybody who's actually burnt come in. It's not our goal to take care of patients. We'd much rather prevent this if at all possible. The other thing is, I would say that with the people that are recovering, the initial trauma is very difficult, but in the long run, what they can't often see is the future as well as I can see it. And in many cases, you know, somebody who can heal up in 2 or 3 weeks is not going to have a permanent scar. Somebody that does have a scar to begin with is going to have a scar that over time is going to improve and fade and become less severe. The soreness and the pain and the discomfort, you know, over time, in many cases, are slowly going to get better. So there's a light at the end of the tunnel for most of these patients that often they can't see while they're going through the process.
Pat? I would say education and awareness. That's what this is all about. So if you can get out there and, you know, gain as much information as you can. We have a very active fire department in our community. They have a wonderful school program, and we have multiple health fairs. And it's just, you know, get out there and learn about the dangers, because I think, as Dr. Morrison has said today, the most important thing is prevention. We can prevent a lot of serious injuries.
Mm, great. And Tammy?
And I just reiterate the same thing they said. You know, prevention is the main thing. I've kind of said to people before, we're one of the few units that would like to put ourselves out of business by preventing all this. Mm. So,
and why don't we give the number for the hotline where people can call 24 hours a day with any burn questions one more time before we close today?
Certainly. 425-3567. And 24/7, anytime, give us a call. Like I said, can speak with a nurse, and she can answer a lot of your questions and your fears and send you in the right direction.
I want to emphasize again that on the website of the Lutheran Health Network, St. Joe Hospital Regional Burn Center, there are some excellent family tips. Personal home fire safety checklist is there for families, and to teach the children and to organize the family what to do in case of the emergency, how to set up a home escape plan, and a whole list of what you can do to prevent electric and heating fires, kitchen issues, bathroom issues, and general fire safety. Very, very worthwhile. And it is on the website, our personal home fire safety checklist for Burn Awareness Week. And this is in conjunction with our burn unit and the Fort Wayne Fire Department and the Allen County school system. Thank you.
Thank you all for being a part of Health 360 today. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1, streaming online at nipr.fm. This is WBOI Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. We're coming up on 1 o'clock, and Fresh Air is up next. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of your day.